Okay, this is George Fatman, April the 6th, around 5 o'clock, and Westmont is the location. So what were you doing the day before the flood?
See, that was... Well, you mean, the flood was the 19th and the 20th.
Yeah, the 19th and 20th.
And so, 19th was a Tuesday, I probably was working. And that evening I was watching the All-Star game and listening to All the Rain. And, you know, and probably went to bed. I know what. I did watch the 11 o'clock news before I went to bed, and they were showing water coming under the main line of the railroad in the West End. And it was thunder and lightning, but, you know, we're probably going to have something like that tonight, but not a Johnstown flood, I guess.
So what were you doing the morning of the flood?
The next morning.
Yeah, the next morning.
Well, I was up during the night. Nightside managing editor of the Tribune Democrat, Ron Gatehouse, called me. I would imagine it was around 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning, and said that the water on Locust Street outside the Tribune was up over the mailbox, and that they couldn't get out, and they didn't have very much information at that point. But he said that, you know, it seems so certainly the city is flooded again. And so when I hung up, I called Dick Mayer, who's my boss, and he said, "Oh, that can't be. That can't be." I said, "Well, you know, the Tribune called and said, Johnstown's flooded again." He said, "I don't believe it." So he hung up, and in no time at all, he and his wife were here, and he went over to the top of the incline, and he said, "It is flooded." And so I remember making, I said, "Do you want something to eat?" I think we were making coffee and toast or something like that. We called back, you know, to the newsroom and urged them to start putting together another newspaper. Because when this flood hit, our morning edition was coming off the press. And so on the 20th of July, we actually published twice. You know, the one that got, you know, it came out into the flood. I'm sure they stopped. But then one that we published later on. And I started calling reporters, and we decided that we would stage over at WJAC because, you know, it's here up mm-hmm. high, and they had a lot of facilities that we could use, and we urged people to come there as soon as they could, and to take any, you know, if they had cameras, take pictures, get any information on the way. And a number of our people were in the flood. You know, their homes were in the flood, and they couldn't get out easily. But that's sort of the way things started out. And I remember that you know, the radio station was also WJAC at WJAC FM would have been. Yeah, they would both be there. And so we used that. Also, the Tribune wrote news for WJAC Radio. Mm-hmm. And so we had a connection there, and we also had some kind of communication, you know, I don't know what it was. We probably just called it a squawk box, but, you know, it would probably be a phone line and with speakers back and forth. So we could talk to the newsroom from WJAC at least for a while. Problem was that we would slowly lose our telephone service, or a lot of other people. We might have had phone service, you know, right at WJAC, for example. I could call here, but there are a lot of places I couldn't call because they would have lost their phone service.
So, was there any expectation of a flood before this before it happened in 77?
Not really. There had been. I mean, this didn't cause the flood, but there had been a good bit of snow build up that winter. And Dick Mayer, he probably told you this, called in the sort of the plant manager, the purchasing agent, the guy who took care of everything that way. And he asked him how much water he thought the Tribune would get in its basement in the spring. And I don't know what calculation they did, because I really wasn't part of this, but they decided that they could have water in the basement, the Tribune, maybe that deep, you know, about 9 inches or so. And they had some things in the basement that they wanted to protect. So they brought in people, you know, way back, maybe in February, I don't know when, and they poured concrete and so that everything could be lifted up. So it's kind of ironic, but no, we didn't expect what you're talking about or what we got.
So how did you recover from the flood?
Who?
How did the Tribune recover from the flood?
Oh, the Tribune recovered really quickly because the publisher decided, you know, that we would publish in Greensburg. And ironically, the computer system at the Tribune was working. There were two computer systems at the Tribune. And of course, this will seem really strange to you, but remember, this was the mid-70s. In the mid-70s, computers ran from a central station. You would have a cathode ray tube and a keyboard, but it wasn't like personal computers, that everything happened in a central, huge central location. Not huge. It would fit in a foyer there, I guess. And there was one on the second floor that was for news, and one on the first floor, which was for business. And the one on the first floor, and the lines for the one on the first floor were underneath a, a raised floor. And of course, that was all ruined by the water. But the system on the second floor worked, and so we could produce a newspaper from the second floor and go as far as, I think, producing the press plates. And the press at the Greensburg Tribune Review was the same press as we had here, so we knew that we could publish there. And meanwhile, as soon as the water went down, and Mrs. Mayer was one of the leaders, Connie Mayer, one of the leaders in getting people into the press room and into this first floor computer area and cleaning that up. And the press at the Tribune Democrat runs by electricity, electric motors. And the electricity for those motors were lower than the press. They were below street level. It was almost like a substation of Penelec. Mm-hmm. But it was, of course, completely flooded and filled with mud. And so there was an effort to clean that out. So this would have begun on the 20th, Wednesday the 20th, and we were able to publish on the 21st. It's incredible to me how they could get that dried out enough that they could start to press. Didn't last long. It lasted about 8,000 copies, but we published. So we published twice on the day of the flood, the 20th, published on the 21st. By the 22nd, we were able to publish regularly. Now that's publication. If you're covering a flood, you just start from your office. You know, there are pictures, you may have seen them, that were taken just from the second floor of the Tribune Democrat, looking toward the Methodist Church in Colossus.
So, earlier I was asking if you had any expectations, but were there any preparations such as flood insurance or any other things like that?
I'm not aware of flood insurance. I'm not aware. There was absolutely no expectation of this kind of flood. You know, we covered seven counties, and so somebody was always having some kind of flooding, but nothing like this, and highly unlikely that it would have been fatal. So, and I don't know whether we had flood insurance or not. Dick would know that. I don't know. So, no, there was but don't forget that a newspaper is used to covering whatever happens and covering the unexpected. We had covered the plane crash, for example, in which Dick's first wife and his son were killed, you know, when the plane was coming into Johnstown. And there are things all the time that you have to gear up for and cover. What was really hard about this was we did not know what was going on. You know, if you saw the first paper came out, there were just a few people dead, and the ultimate death toll was 85 dead or missing. We had a really difficult time getting information. I remember we were in the conference room at WJAC, and they had a blackboard, you know, an ordinary blackboard, and we would try to write down the names of people we knew were dead, if we knew they were dead, or where a body was found or something like that. And I mean, by the end of the day Wednesday, we had next to nothing. And at some point Wednesday afternoon, we got a really difficult phone call from our bureau at the courthouse in Evansburg, from Bill Dixon, who was the manager of that bureau. And I could just barely hear him say that somebody had made it to Evansburg from Tanneryville, which, you know, ultimately had the highest death toll, 40, I think it was. And somebody got up there and had told him this incredible story that a dam had broken and that there was all kinds of death and destruction at Tanneryville. And he didn't know whether that was true or not, but we should try to get over there, which we did. We got through to the water company, I guess it would be in the 77, no, it was the Water Authority, the water company. They denied that dam broke. I don't know if they knew or not. It seems to me they would know if their dam broke. And they denied that the dam broke. They didn't admit that the dam broke for a couple of days. So that was a problem we were having. One thing that was advantageous is that WJAC TV's location became a staging area. And so Jack Murtha was there, Senator Hines was there, Governor Schaap was there, you know, these people were there. Now, we weren't there all the time. I mean, my goal, of course, was to get downtown into the newsroom. So we were really operating at least two newsrooms, plus the bureaus as they came up, as they were able to produce. We had seven bureaus back in those days. Mm-hmm. But there was no preparation other than, and I don't see how you could possibly have prepared for this, because we really didn't know what was going on.
So what was it like 1 week after the flood?
Muddy. Everything was muddy. It looked like a war zone. After a few days, I was able to get the... One way we operated was that we traded with General Telephone, later Verizon. It was across a narrow alley from the Tribune. We both fronted on Locust Street. And we traded an electric line for a phone line, you know, across the alley. So we had that. And also, the roof of General Telephone became a helicopter pad. And so at some point, I had an opportunity to fly out of there, and it was just amazing. I mean, to fly over this area. And of course, the streets were patrolled by the National Guard. Mm-hmm. There's mud everywhere, cars through windows. You probably watched this on YouTube or someplace, because there's a lot of video available. And it was really something to ride in a helicopter over Johnstown and the neighborhoods, the Solomon Run area, Tanneryville, on out toward Indiana County and across. And I remember we were flying back over like Seward and back over the mountain. And the next thing we saw was Susquehanna Country Club and people were playing golf. It was unreal. Coming home was unreal. You know, get out of Diamond Johnson, come here. There was nothing wrong here. I think we had to get water a couple times. You know, go out to the spring or to those water buffaloes. But before long, you know, water was restored here. You come home here and live a perfectly normal life. And it was like living in two worlds.
So what was it like 1 month after the flood?
I don't know. I think, you know, we were publishing right away. In fact, I remember laying out a Sunday paper that would have been, let's see, 1921, 22, on the 24th, our Sunday paper. Sunday paper was relatively new. Well, we had designed that in the spring, I think in March or April. And we had all these color pictures, and I was laying out this, I forget where I was, I think in my office. It was a very cramped place. And I was laying out the Sunday paper, and we published that. A month later, I was able to join my family at the shore, you know. Mm-hmm. I wasn't able to drive down, able to fly down mm-hmm. to New Jersey. We were in a recovery mode, you know. It was a long time cleaning up. But I can't tell you exactly what I recall from a month later. But if I was able to go away, things weren't too bad.
So what was it like 1 year after the flood?
Oh, we did a 1 year anniversary, kept doing anniversary editions. Year afterwards, I have very few memories of after. I remember and this isn't a year after, but I remember going to Gooseneck Island in the Conemaugh River because we thought some bodies were buried among all the huge overgrowth. This every once in a while would become an island, every once in a while would be covered with water. That's the last thing that stands out as being unusual. I mean, other than that, we were just sailing along. The big story was money for recovery and the fact that there was a certain amount of corruption related to that, because you would have all kinds of contractors coming in from out, because people needed contractors, they needed builders. So by a year after, there was probably a certain amount of building, there was a certain amount of suspicion of wrongdoing. I don't remember the exact time frame on that. The other thing was that because the dam had burst, and Laurel Run wasn't the only dam that burst. Mm-hmm. There was other dams, in outlying areas that burst, one up along 219 going toward the South Fork area or somewhat. So one of the Tribune's commitments was to make sure that the remaining dams were safe. So that was probably one of the biggest matters that occupied, our efforts. And I remember one time that we received information about the condition of one of the dams, I think Kingston Run, I could be wrong. We weren't supposed to have that information. And just about that time, the Supreme Court ruled that officials could go into a newsroom and demand information that was unpublished. I thought it was grossly un-American, but it was the law at the time. So we had to find a place to hide this information. I mean, we may have been overreacting, but we didn't want them to find out that we had this information. I think it ended up being locked in my personal safety deposit box. So
what was it like 10 years after the flood?
No difference. A friend of mine who was editor of the Biloxi, Mississippi newspaper, had a flood a couple years before the Johnstown 77 flood. He got in touch with me, called, and he said, I know that you are really pessimistic and tired and worn out. And he said, we went through a flood in Biloxi, and I just want to tell you that, you'll recover and you'll be fine. And indeed we did. I mean, there were all kinds of other issues came along eventually that we had to deal with. But everything is like, it happened before the flood, it happened after the flood. That really is a timeline in my personal life, and I think in the life of many other people.
So what was the worst effect of the flood?
Do you mean like materially, economically? Yes,
in general. What was the worst effect?
Materially, it would be the loss of Bethlehem Steel, which was in trouble anyway. And Bethlehem was in the process of installing a basic oxygen furnace, which would be the state of the industry for heavy steel. That was never built. Bethlehem Steel, meanwhile, was having a lot of difficulty because they weren't dealing very well with foreign competition. They were laying off people, of course. And with a lot of effort by our civic leaders, our political leaders, and so forth, persuaded Bethlehem Steel to put in electric furnaces. And those do not create steel from iron and coke and so forth. They just melt down scrap steel that comes in rail cars. So that's what we were down to. And of course, eventually that failed, and so did U.S. Steel.
So who was the biggest help in the flood recovery process?
Dick Mayer was one of them. And he eventually became, there were different groups formed to do different things. And they needed a kind of a overall chair, boss, whatever you want to call him. And they turned to Dick Mayer to do this. Jack Murtha, our congressman, would be another one. And he, of course, it turned out that Jack Murtha really was a great leader of this region. I remember when I lost my job as editor of the Tribune Democrat through a sale and what happens with that. And Jack Sheehan, who had grown up in Kernville and had been on a Federal Reserve Board and very successful as an industrialist, came back and bought U.S. Steel's plant in Moxham and made it to Johnstown Corporation. And when I lost my job, I didn't know him that well, but he took me to supper at Sunny Anna and tried to, build me up about that. I'm not telling you the story because of me. I'm telling you the story because he said, George, at my age, I have a few aches and pains, my friends are getting sick, my friends are dying. And he said, when I get up in the morning, I thank God that I'm alive and well. And number two, I thank God for Jack Murtha because of all he's meant to this community. And I'm sure he wasn't a Democrat, Jack Sheehan. That was a Democrat. Mm-hmm. So Jack Murtha really, rose up with the Johnstown flood and became, the flood really did hurt us economically. He tried to save Bethlehem Steel, tried to bring in other things. We also had Johnstown Area Regional Industries, which we still have, was formed. I forget when that was formed, but that was an important factor.
So the last question I'm going to ask is, in the cleanup process, did you find any interesting artifacts?
Not that I recall. There might have been something. Our older son and his group from our church, which was downtown, after they cleaned up, our church was really a mess, it was on Vine Street. They went and helped other people. And one of them was a woman who was a Greek immigrant, who was actually, had eventually became sort of like my second mother, because when I was first in Johnstown, I had a garret apartment in her house on Main Street, down by Bingley Ford. And at some point, her house was badly damaged by the flood. And about a day or two afterwards, somebody burglarized her house, dragged all her good clothes through the mud and out. I don't know why they would take her clothes, but our son and many other people who were about your age, went and helped clean up. And I don't recall that in all this cleaning up that anybody found any, I'm sure that they were unusual artifacts, but nothing comes to mind.
Okay, I'd like to thank you for your time in the interview today.
Thank you.